You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 9:59 a.m. Next up is American Standoff with Jacqueline Keeler.
So take heart and take care of your link with life. It's beautiful.
Good morning. This is Jacqueline Keeler on KBOO, and I am your host for today's call-in show, American Standoff. And in this show, we examine the current political divide in America from an Indigenous perspective, given by myself, a Native journalist based here in Oregon. And so I'd like to explain that a year ago, on January 6, 2021, we all saw the thousands of supporters of President Trump gathered in D.C., and storming the Capitol, and the prosecution of some of these folks is still ongoing today, and the contesting of President Biden's election is still an issue today, and we will examine that a bit with the Texas primary and the effect of the big lie on that primary, and of course in the midterms ahead. But today we're going to look specifically at the accusations that media coverage, we're going to open the show, I should say, with accusations that media coverage of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia is racist. And what would it mean if all preemptive wars were given this kind of coverage? And so certainly I'm not saying that that Ukrainians do not deserve this level of coverage. They do. But what if this was applied across the board? And could it stop wars? I mean, it's a bit of a big question. And so we're also discussing far right, as I mentioned earlier, Lauren Boebert's outburst at the far representative Boebert's outburst at President Biden's State of the Union address on Tuesday, and a bit about what that means as far as the discourse in this country, and her position as a congresswoman in Colorado. She actually occupies the former congressional seat of Cheyenne, former senator, U.S. senator, Ben Nyhorst Campbell, and he actually did campaign for her, so he became Republican, and is also a Trump supporter as well. What do all of these news stories have in common? And so on the show today, American Standoff, we're going to examine the connections between these seemingly disparate events, happening internationally and nationally, and also here within our state. And we're looking at their origins in white supremacy and the DNA of colonialism and the ongoing occupation of indigenous homelands in the United States. My name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I am your host. This is a call-in show, so please call in. The number here in the studio is 503-231-8187. And so, last week on our last show last Thursday, that was the day that Putin Putin commenced his invasion of Ukraine. We examined in that show Trump's support of Putin's strategy, his stated support at the time, and also the American trucker convoy, which is headed to D.C. A couple of episodes earlier, we discussed on the show the Canadian trucker convoy that was blocking border crossings and refusing to leave Ottawa. That, of course, has been cleared, as I mentioned earlier on the previous show, that I believe that would have happened sooner if the convoy was led by non-white Canadians. So the American trucker convoy is still an ongoing story, and it's been somewhat obscured now by the war in Ukraine. And we will open now with some of the troubling media coverage of that tragic war on civilians in Ukraine.
But this isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that has seen conflict raging for decades. You know, this is a relatively civilized, relatively European, I have to choose those words carefully too, city where you wouldn't expect that or hope that it's going to happen.
When you look at what happened in the last refugee crisis in Europe back in 2015, Poland was one of the EU countries that, was hesitant to take in refugees. Talk about what has changed and the different position now.
These are not refugees from Syria. These are refugees from neighboring Ukraine. I mean, that, quite frankly, is part of it. These are Christians. They're white. They're very similar to many people who live in Poland.
These are prosperous. I'm loath to use the expression. These are prosperous middle-class people. These are not obviously refugees trying to get away from areas in the Middle East that are still in a big state of war. These are not people trying to get away from areas in North Africa. They look like any European family that you would live next door to.
Yes, so that was a bit of the coverage that we've been hearing that's considered troubling and sort of the racial overtones of the coverage. And I'd like to say good morning again. This is American Standoff. We're a live talk radio show. So please do call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. And my name is Jacqueline Keeler, and I'm your host. I'd like to introduce myself. As I mentioned earlier, I am a native journalist based here in Oregon. I am not a citizen of one of the 9 federally recognized tribes here in Oregon. I am a citizen of the Navajo Nation, and my father was a Yankton Sioux, Yankton Dakota. And I like to say Yak E, which is how we say hello in Navajo, and She'e, Jacqueline Keeler, Yinshia. And in the Navajo way, we introduce ourselves to our clans. I am Kia'ani Nishle. My clan is Towering House. These clans are matrilineal, passed down through the maternal line. And then I am born for my paternal grandmother's clan, which would be, since she's not Navajo, I just say the tribe, Ihankamon Dakota, Yankton Dakota Sioux. And so, and this is how we introduce ourselves and explain who we are in Navajo. And so I'd also like to acknowledge that what we now call Portland, Oregon, are the ancestral homelands of the Multnomah, Wasco, Kathlamet, Clackamas, Cowlitz, bands of Chinook, Tualatin, Kayapuya, Malala, and many other tribes. And I would just like to acknowledge that I live on their homelands. And so a year ago, on January 6th, this show was premiered on January 6th, 2022, a year later, partly to commemorate that and to emphasize the focus of the show, which is examining the political divide in this country and also ramifications abroad. So we want to discuss, what's happened in the year since and what have we learned, as Americans. Today we are discussing allegations that media coverage of Ukraine has been characterized as racist by some and what this means and, And Republicans, and also, you know, part of the show will be about Republicans' continued assault on the democratic processes in this country, examining specifically, some of the outbursts at the State of the Union, maybe a bit on the Texas primary as well. Once again, I'd like to encourage you to call in if you want to be part of this conversation. The number here is 503-231-8187, and I'm Jacqueline Keeler, your host. Let's see here. We just played a compilation of statements given by news reporters describing the Ukrainians as white, civilized, blonde, and Christian, right? And saying sometimes overtly, that this makes them more compelling victims of Putin's aggression than, say, folks in Syria or Yemen. The Arab and Middle Eastern Journalists Association, AMEGA, and issued a statement calling on all, quote, this is a quote, on all news organizations to be mindful of implicit and explicit bias in their coverage of war in Ukraine. In only the last few days, we have tracked examples of racist news coverage that ascribes more importance to some victims of war over others. They cite a bunch of examples. On February 26th, during a CBS News segment, correspondent Charlie DeGatta commented, "But this isn't a place, with all due respect, like Iraq or Afghanistan, that has seen conflict raging for decades. This is a relatively civilized, relatively European," and he says, "I have to choose these words carefully, to city, one where you would not expect that or hope that is going to happen." So we played a bunch of those quotes already. And even Al Jazeera, their anchor, Peter Dobby, said, "What's compelling is just looking at them, the way they are dressed. These are prosperous, I'm loath to use the expression, middle-class people. They are not obviously refugees looking to get away from areas in the Middle East. They are still in a big state of war." "These are not people trying to get away from areas in North Africa. They look like any European family that you would live next door to." And I believe that Al Jazeera has issued a statement apologizing for this. Charlie DeGatta also issued, CBS correspondent also issued an apology. I think that Al Jazeera actually fired Peter Dobby for these statements. So there has been media has responded to this. But, as a journalist, as a native journalist, one of the reasons I do the work I do is to provide the perspective, that I have as being a citizen of a native nation within the United States. And I think that, that's the perspective I brought to my reporting at Standing Rock. And that's the perspective I try to bring in the books I write, and really try to convey a different history of America, a different kind of context. And so you can see with the casual, this reporting is not casual. It's not correct for me to refer to it that way. I know what it's like to be on the ground trying to report, it's so funny. At Standing Rock, I was there on the ground, and I felt like it was harder to find out more about what was going on when we didn't have great cell coverage there. And then to have to talk to a BBC World Reporter, what's going on there. It was a difficult kind of thing to provide immediate responses when you're under the stress of reporting on the ground. And I imagine, especially in a place like Ukraine, with what's going on there. And I respect journalists' situation there. But yeah, these quotes are troubling. AMEGA, or they're called the Arab and Middle Eastern Journalists Association, states that they condemn and categorically reject Orientalist and racist implications that any population or country is uncivilized or bears economic factors that make it worthy of invasion. So this type of commentary, shows the pervasive mentality in Western journalism of normalizing tragedy in parts of the world such as the Middle East, Africa, South Asia, and Latin America. It dehumanizes and renders their experience of the war as somehow normal and expected. Newsrooms must not make comparisons that weigh the significance or imply justification of one conflict over another. Civilian casualties and displacement in other countries are equally as abhorrent as they are in Ukraine. And then they say further that Emeja stands in full solidarity with all civilians under military assault in any part of the world. And we deplore the difference in news coverage of people in one country versus another. Not only can such coverage decontextualize conflicts, but it contributes to the erasure of populations around the world who continue to experience violent occupation and aggression. In order to prevent such explicit bias, we call on newsrooms to train correspondents on the cultural and political nuances of regions they're reporting on, and not rely on American or Eurocentric biases. Inaccurate and disingenuous comparisons only serve to inflame stereotypes and mislead viewers, and they ultimately perpetuate prejudicial responses to political and humanitarian crises. So what do you think? Do you feel this coverage has been biased? And does this lead to different treatment of peoples in other countries? Is the humanization of one group grossly outsized because perceived as white and European, right? And so this is the question that's been brought forward. Once again, Mike, I'd like to encourage people to call in. Our lines are open. The number here is 503-231-8187. So I don't bring this up to say that coverage of the invasion of Ukraine by Russia is the coverage is unjustified, right? It is, but the people there are genuinely suffering in ways that are unacceptable. But what would the world be like if all war was covered this way? Would we have less war, right? What if the sanctions, you have unified sanctions of countries around the world, crippling the Russian economy? And I think last I heard, the ruble has lost 40% of its value. And interest rates are at 20%. And Russian oligarchs are losing their yachts, access to their yachts. I mean, Biden had mentioned that in his State of the Union address. They're coming after your yachts. And one Roman Abramov, a Russian oligarch close to Putin, is conducting a fire sale of his English Premier League team, Chelsea Football Club. You know, he's saying, he's not even asking for like the one more than $1 billion he's invested in the team back. He's just letting it go. And so it's really interesting. It's obvious, these are what would it be like if this happened more often, right? On Tuesday, March 1st, during a press conference in Poland, a Ukrainian activist, Daria Kalinuk, the executive director of the Anti-Corporation Action Center, challenged British Prime Minister Boris Johnson over his country's failure to bring in swift sanctions against Russian oligarchs and their families living, and some of them going to school, have their children in schools, private schools in London itself. And I think Putin's children are actually in the Netherlands going to school there. And she also pressed Johnson over the collective refusal of NATO countries to enforce a no-fly zone over Ukraine. So can we hear the audio of that Ukrainian activist?
Minister Daria Kalinuk, I had Anti-Corruption Action Center from Ukraine. I passed the border a couple of days ago. I'm from Kyiv. Most of my family, most of my team members are still in Ukraine, in Kyiv, in Lviv. A woman from my team is now in Bila Tserkva, and she is there with two kids, and Russian military is over there, and she's so much afraid that she will be shot. Kharkiv, the city where I was studying, was bombarded today, fully, the downtown square. So you're talking about the stoicism of Ukrainian people, but Ukrainian women and Ukrainian children are in deep fear because of bombs and missiles which are going from the sky. And Ukrainian people are desperately asking for the West to protect our sky. We are asking for the no-fly zone. We are saying in response that it will trigger World War III. But what is the alternative, Mr. Prime Minister? To observe how our children are, instead of planes, are protecting NATO from the missiles and bombs? What's the alternative for the no-fly zone? We have planes here, we have air defense system in Poland, in Romania. NATO has this air defense. At least this air defense could shield the Western Ukraine so that these children with women could come to the border. It's impossible now to cross the border. There are 30 kilometers of lines. Imagine crossing the border with a baby or with two children. I'm so glad that Samantha Power is coming here to the border from the Polish side. Let her come to the border from Ukrainian side and see that. Britain guaranteed our security under Budapest Memorandum. So you're coming to Poland. You're not coming to Kiev, Prime Minister. You're not coming to Lviv because you are afraid. Because NATO is not willing to defend. Because NATO is afraid of the World War III. But it is already started. And these are Ukrainian children who are there taking the hit. You're talking about more sanctions, Prime Minister. But Roman Abramovich is not sanctioned. He's in London. His children are not in the bombardments. His children are there in London. Putin's children are in Netherlands, in Germany, in mansions. Where are all these mansions seized? I don't see that. I see that my family members, that my team members are saying that we are crying. We don't have where to run. Well, this is what is happening, Prime Minister.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for your questions, and thank you for getting here today. And I'm glad that you have been able to get here. And look, I just want to say that I'm acutely conscious that there is not enough that we can do as the UK government to help in the way that you want. And I've got to be honest about that. And when you talk about the no-fly zone, as I said to Volodymyr Zelensky, I think a couple of times, unfortunately, the implication of that is that the UK and would be engaged in shooting down Russian planes, would be engaged in direct combat with Russia. That's not something that we can do or that we've envisaged. And I think the consequences of that would be truly very, very difficult to control. What we can do is all the things that we are doing already, and providing as much help and support to the Ukrainians as we can. And as I said to you earlier on, the UK was the first European country to offer military assistance. Also doing everything we can to tighten the economic noose around the Putin regime, and we were amongst the very first to put that package together. And I have to tell you, I think that it will work. I think that Vladimir Putin's venture is doomed to fail, and I think that it will be extremely difficult for him to continue on the path that he is on.
So that was Prime Minister, British Prime Minister Boris Johnson speaking to a Ukrainian activist who was questioning the lack of response She says that World War III has already begun, which is a really quite striking statement, and that Ukrainian children are basically acting as protecting NATO, right, with their lives. So we have a couple callers. Greg, what are your thoughts on all this?
My thoughts are that what we did in 2014 is directly responsible for what's happening now. It's unfortunate, to my mind, that you're focusing on the racist aspects of this. I really wish you could stop using that word. You do understand that we put the Nazis in power after 2014. We used them as the military force that we physically overthrew the government after the free and fair election. So Putin, immediately, this whole thing is about the demonization of Putin. He immediately annexed Crimea. It was actually reported at the time the reason why he annexed Crimea, that is, he has his naval warm water port there called Sevastopol that they've had for more than 200 years. It's where the nuclear fleet is based. So the Russians are the only deterrent we have in the oceans as far as missiles that are on submarines. Putin is not going to give this up. This is the whole entire reason why he's invading. We've surrounded him since the Soviet Union fell apart, and we've surrounded him with hard right governments. The government in Poland is very hard right. In fact, I would say they're Nazis. So when Putin announced that he was going to demilitarize and denazify, we were told, oh, there can't be Nazis there because the president is a Jew. The president guy is a comedian. He was playing a sitcom, had the Ukrainian president on it, and he was elected because of the incredible corruption that happened after we overthrew the country in the spring of 2014. We immediately after we overthrew the government in Kiev, sent the Nazis out to eastern Ukraine to defend against the so-called separatists. So the country is like this. There's a river that runs down the middle of it. The western part of it was formerly Austria-Hungarian Empire. The Bolsheviks got that after World War I.
I'd like to interrupt you because we have another caller online. But I thank you for your perspective on that and some of the history there. I think so just to kind of the caller was saying that you know he doesn't appreciate me addressing the allegations that the coverage has been racist. And the issue of framing Europeanism as something where white people would not actually endure these kinds of conflicts in their own countries versus other countries where brown people live. And so and I appreciate that to hear that perspective. And then some of the history, and I will give it more. I'm going to quote a bit from Chris Hedges' piece on the war, which I found his perspective to be really interesting. And having been covered these kind of conflicts on the ground, and so we'll read a bit from that. Oh, we just lost Philip. Philip, please do call back in, and I would love to hear from you. Once again, the number here is in the studio is 503-231-8187. And you know, we just heard some of the issues about the recovering some of the we opened the show actually with the issue of the framing of the coverage of the focus on the blondness and whiteness and Europeanness and civilizedness of Ukrainians versus people in Middle Eastern countries and African countries and Latin American countries and the call out by Middle Eastern journalists about this coverage, and then also from a Ukrainian activist who is in Poland, who confronted Boris Johnson, Prime Minister of Britain, and about the lack of support and the suffering of Ukrainian children in Ukraine right now. So I'd love to hear from more of you. We have another caller, Marcos.
Oh, good morning.
Morning.
I very much appreciated the last caller for filling in some history. I kind of wish you'd let him continue on. I didn't really find Boris Johnson's comments to be very instructive. When you're talking about racism, that's obviously a piece of it. You may know that black people fleeing Ukraine, Africans that were studying in Ukraine, were denied entry into Poland. So that's a racist thing. And the quotes that you were talking about, how refugees who are essentially white and blonde-haired and blue-eyed are being treated than refugees from other countries such as Syria and so on. That's also true. But I'm getting a sense from your tone, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that you see this as something that started roughly a week ago with Putin making an act of aggression, and that is essentially the timeline that everything that's following now is a result of simply Putin's irrational aggression, and everyone who is now victimized by that is being victimized by Putin. It's important to understand that 14,000 people have been killed prior to this. In the eastern parts of Ukraine, these are Russian-speaking people who were being attacked by the central government in Kiev, by the Kiev army.
Aware of that history, and sadly our show is very short, and I would love to have a much longer show to go into that history. The issue the show is discussing right now is the issue of racism and coverage. And it feels to me like what you're trying to do is to sideline that in order to focus on other things. And so, you know, obviously there is a very, you know, real history to this thing. And I'm not saying that it's began simply a week ago. That's not what I have said, but I referenced that because a week ago I did a show about this. So the I really want to hear about, you know, do you feel that this racism and coverage, you know, and if we actually had coverage like this, you know, for what's going on in Yemen or Syria, you know, or, you know, our own invasion of Iraq, right? If you want to, and look at that history. I mean, what if all the nations had united against us this way, right? Preemptive war, if all preemptive war was covered the same way and the sanctions and reactions were identical, you know, what would the world look like? And that's my question. And we have another. Thank you, Marco. Thank you. And I understand there is a bigger history here, and this isn't the discussion that we're having now does not preclude that, right? But what we are discussing is a particular issue. You know, and the show focuses on the issue of white supremacy. This is the focus of the show, right? And so what Putin is claiming that he's there to protect the genocide of Russian speakers. Well, he's bombed a lot of Russian speaking cities. You know, I mean, he's killed a lot of people there. So I don't know if that his talking points. I'm not really sure, and we can investigate that further in another show, obviously. But the issue right now is, could we have a different world today if coverage was different of all of these wars, right? And that is my question. Could we actually stop war? You know, and I think that preemptive war, and, you know, I was going to bring this up later, but, you know, Chris Hedges has a really excellent essay, and it came out on March 2nd yesterday, and you can see it in the Sheer Post. I think it was also republished at the Real News Network. And the title of it is War is the Greatest Evil, right? He says, Russia was baited into war, but that does not absolve its criminal acts of aggression. And he says, preemptive war, whether in Iraq or Ukraine, is a war crime. It does not matter if the war is launched on the basis of lies and fabrications, as was the case in Iraq, or because of the breaking of a series of agreements with Russia, including the promise by Washington not to extend NATO beyond the borders of a unified Germany, not to deploy thousands of NATO troops in Eastern Europe, not to meddle in the internal affairs of nations on the Russia's border, and the refusal to implement the Minsk II peace agreement. The invasion of Ukraine would, I expect, never have happened if these promises had been kept. Russia has every right to feel threatened, betrayed, and angry, but to understand is not to condone. The invasion of Ukraine under post-Nuremberg laws is a criminal war of aggression. And he says, I know the instrument of war. War is not politics by other means. It is demonic. I spent 2 decades as a war correspondent in Central America, the Middle East, Africa, and the Balkans, where I covered the wars in Bosnia and Kosovo. I carry within me the ghosts of dozens of those swallowed up in the violence, including my close friend, Reuters correspondent Kirk Shork, who was killed in an ambush in Sierra Leone with another friend, Gil Moreno. I know the chaos and disorientation of war, the constant uncertainty and confusion. In a firefight, you are only aware of what is happening a few feet in front of you. You desperately and not always successfully struggle to figure out where the fighting is coming from in the hopes you can avoid being hit. And I cover more of this. I really do recommend reading it. And I will add the link to the webpage for this episode in there so you can read it as well. And it's just a really excellent examination of it. I heard him speak on, he was interviewed, I think, on NPR about this. And he was describing, it was just a really, really, I recommend checking out his writing on this issue. But what we really want to discuss, the things that we are discussing, actually. So I thank the callers for bringing it up. I have a very, specific question, and I would love to have folks call in to address it. And I think it's really important to have these conversations about how racism impacts the world, because it is a source of so much violence, right? And the violence we're seeing happen in Ukraine is horrific, and I fully support the statements, opposing it. But I think what I also want to think about is, what does this mean to be drawn into war this way? the escalation of war, and what does it mean? So and in that light, I'd like to play another quote, to play another audio clip. The other day I was listening to NPR coverage of three Ukrainian men being conscripted into the Ukrainian army, and one did not want to fight. Another went with, from sympathy and horror at the pictures of dead Russian soldiers that accompanied every Ukrainian victory on social media to eagerly making Molotov cocktails to fight the invasion of his country. At first, you might judge the young man determined to leave Ukraine, but as I heard their stories, I began to grapple with the fact that Putin is acting like a puppet master of millions of people's lives to turn them against each other and make them live with acts of killing one another or dying themselves. And it reminded me kind of a Squid Game, you know. And so I was also riveted on Sunday by the live feed from DW News, Deutsche Welle News, that's the German news outlet, of Chancellor Olaf Scholz's address to the Bundestag. Let's play some of that now.
How can there be a war in Europe now? Many of you have been expressing this outrage in Berlin. We have experienced a break in everything we have known until now, and that means that the world before this attack is not the same as the world before it. Essentially, it's about the question of whether might can break laws, whether we can allow Putin to turn back the clock to the time of imperial powers of the 19th century, or whether we can draw a line in the sand and contain this.
Das setzt eigene Stärke voraus.
This requires strength on our part. Ladies and gentlemen, in attacking Ukraine, Putin doesn't just want to eradicate a country from the world map. He is destroying the European security structure that we have had since the final act of Helsinki for nearly half a century. And in doing so, he is putting himself outside of the international community worldwide. But with the attack on Ukraine, we find ourselves in a new age. In Kiev, in Kharkiv, Odessa, Mariupol, people are not just defending their homeland, they are fighting for liberty and democracy, for values that we share with them. As Democrats, as Europeans, we stand with you. We stand on the right side of history with you. On Thursday, President Putin, in attacking Ukraine, created a new reality. And this new reality requires a clear response. We have given this clear response. As you know, yesterday we decided that Germany will deliver weapons to Ukraine so it can defend itself. This is a major challenge for the entire country. It means to have a modern, progressive German armed forces, Bundeswehr, that can protect us. In the Munich Security Conference a week ago, I said we need aircraft, we need ships, and we need soldiers who are well equipped, ideally equipped for their missions. That's what it's about. And this can be done for a country as big as we are, as important as we are in Europe. But let's not kid ourselves. Better equipment, more personnel, all of this costs a lot of money. And for that, we will set up a special fund for the German armed forces, and I'm grateful to German Finance Minister Lindner for his support in this. The 2022 German budget will have 100 billion euros earmarked for this as a one-off, and this money will be used for investment in the German armed forces. From now on, year for year, more than 2% of our GDP will be invested in defense.
So that was, you're listening to coverage from DW News, Deutsche Welle News from Germany, of German Chancellor Olaf Scholz's address to the Bundestag on Sunday. And that was very concerning. I mean, I listened to all of the speeches, and I'd have to say, like I said, I was riveted and very concerned. I think what do you think of the news, Germany rearming itself, basically, well, for defense, but on a scale not seen since World War II, and sending, it's you call into the studio here if you want to be part of this conversation. This is American Standoff. I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler, and the number is 503-231-8187. Okay, we have another caller on the line.
Yes, hello, is it me?
Yes, hi. What's your name?
Hi. I'd like to complain about you cutting our two previous callers off. I thought what they had to say was very informative. And what needs to be said about why this war is going on, and another standpoint, like from the history of it.
Can you address
about the Nazis that you won't hear on national PR?
But you won't discuss the issue of racism. Why is that?
It's not that I don't want to discuss the point of racism. That's on all of the stations. But these people had something very pertinent and important to say about the history.
There are lots of shows on here on KBOO that address different issues. This show is particularly looking, and I'm a native journalist. I am in journalism to provide a perspective that is not often heard, right? And the statements by Middle Eastern journalists about the coverage and comparing that to other wars, where that coverage has not happened in the mainstream media, is a very important topic, right?
I understand that you're very focused on that topic, but that is the topic, hearing other sides.
That is the topic of the show, right? That is the actual topic of the show. You know, what I feel is happening is that white listeners are unwilling to discuss it, right? And so why is that?
Well, as I
both
say,
of white, both of those previous callers were, you know, people, those ones were white. That is the focus. That is the title of the show, Gavin. And so it is. This is about the issue of white supremacy. Right. This is the topic of the show. And so the other two men were white men talking down to a native woman. Do you think that's appropriate? They assume things about my knowledge that were diminishing me as a journalist. You are doing the same. You know, do you think
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question. I'll just get off the phone.
Do you feel like that the way they addressed me was disrespectful, assumed very little about my knowledge, because I'm focusing on the issue of how white mainstream journalists present the issue, right? They assume all these other things about me. Do you think it's because I'm a native woman? And do you think that's appropriate? That's the question of the show. The show is about white supremacy and all of its ramifications that sometimes are completely, white people are blind to. They don't even see it, even when they're doing it. I get talked down to a lot, and I know when I hear it. So the question is the issue of white supremacy in the news coverage. Okay? It doesn't mean I don't understand the history. Right? And then I did read, Chris Hedges' point of view on it. And, I think that, and I think these are important conversations to have, and that's why we're having them. Because white supremacy coupled with colonialism is the root of so much of the war happening in the world today.
So the coverage, the issue that the Middle Eastern journalists brought up is really important in that context. And that is the context of the of American standoff, is the role of white supremacy in the division in America and its, you know, corollary effects across the world. Anyway, I'd like to continue with the next part of the show, and I appreciate what you're saying, but, you know, that information is definitely being broadcast here, but this particular show, American Standoff, is about the issue of white supremacy. And either you want to have that conversation or you don't, but don't deflect. And don't try to diminish me and my knowledge of what's going on to serve that deflection. Anyway, so once again, I wanted to say that I want perspective, but let's stay on topic, okay? There are other shows that will address the history of this and do it very well, but this issue is discussing white supremacy, all right, and its impacts. If you want to have that conversation, please do call in, because it is the most essential conversation that we can have right now with a division in this country and also its ramifications abroad, and the history of colonialism that was carried out under white supremacist sort of frameworks, and all the wars we're seeing all over the place are part of that. And the wars that we ignore, the victims we ignore, are part of that situation. And KBOO is a place that we can have that conversation. All right, we have another caller. Francis?
Hi.
Hi, Francis.
How are you doing? I'm doing fine, and I just called to give you some moral support because I understand exactly what you're talking about. And what is disheartening to me is the fact that, for example, for the last I don't know how many years, Saudi Arabia has been bombing the bejeebies out of Yemen, and there have been thousands of people, collateral damage as they call it, killed. Babies are starving right now because their supply lines are totally destroyed. And the bombs that Saudi Arabia uses were purchased from our country. If that were reported about 24/7 as this crisis in Ukraine is now, maybe it would be different right now. But right now, there are thousands of people suffering in Yemen, and we do not hear about it at all. There's Somalia. Our airplanes are bombing Somalia. We don't hear about that at all. So I totally relate to what you're saying. And what is most disheartening to me is that no one is stepping back and looking at the big picture. Somebody's making bank right now, and the people that are making bank, actually, they're not people. They're corporations. They're short-term profits, such as Lockheed Martin and all the military industrial complex. Their money is flowing right now. As long as they keep dropping bombs, that's what's going to happen. And as far as I'm concerned, the world is way too small for us to even be having an enemy. This is ridiculous. It's absurd. It's not logical. And the fact that it's playing out is just, I don't even know what to call it. It's amazing to me that after so many years and so much history and so much knowledge of how this stuff plays out, it's still happening. Anyway, I appreciate you. Can you hear me?
You're on.
Hi, I'm from Jacqueline Keeler. I'm back on the air again. Sorry about that. I got disconnected. Is Debbie still on the line? Okay, great. I'd like to thank Debbie for calling in. I heard the first part of what she had to say, and you know, I don't I think that we really need to stay on focus because this is a very short 1 hour piece. And so I really appreciate anyone's comments about the issue of white supremacy in media news reporting. I think it's a really important issue. I'd like to actually read from some more from Chris Hedges' essay that was published yesterday called War is the Greatest Evil. And I know that, you know, we don't want to see the people in Ukraine suffer, or see anyone suffer war, you know. What this war is really beginning to make me think about is, are the terms on which we are made to suffer violence. And so I found his words very, Chris Hedges' words very interesting. He says, war destroys all systems that sustain and nurture life, familial, economic, cultural, political, environmental, and social. Once war begins, no one, even those nominally in charge of waging war, can guess what will happen, how the war will develop, how it drives armies and nations towards suicidal folly. There are no good wars. None. This includes World War II, which has been sanitized and mythologized to mendaciously celebrate American heroism, purity, and goodness. If truth is the first casualty of war, war ambiguity is the second. The bellicose rhetoric embraced and amplified by the American press, demonizing Vladimir Putin and elevating Ukrainians to the status of demigods, demanding more robust military intervention, along with the crippling sanctions meant to bring down Vladimir Putin's government, is infantile and dangerous. The Russian media narrative is as simplistic as ours. There were no discussions about pacifism in the basements in Sarajevo when we were being hit with hundreds of Serbian shells a day or under constant sniper fire. It made sense to defend the city. It made sense to kill or be killed. The Bosnian Serb soldiers in the Drina Valley, Vukovar, Srebrenica, had amply demonstrated their capacity for murderous rampages, including the gunning down of hundreds of soldiers and civilians and the wholesale rape of women and girls. But this did not save any of the defenders in Sarajevo from the poison of violence, the soul-destroying force that is war. I knew a Bosnian soldier who heard a sound behind a door while patrolling on the outskirts of Sarajevo. He fired a burst from his AK-47 through a door. A delay of a few seconds in combat can mean death. When he opened the door, he found the bloody remains of a 12. His daughter was 12. He never recovered. Only the autocrats and politicians who dream of empire and global hegemony, of the godlike power that comes with wielding armies, warplanes, and fleets, along with the merchants of death whose business floods countries with weapons, profit from war. The expansion of NATO into Eastern Europe has earned Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Analytics Services, Huntington Ingalls, Humana, BAE Systems, and L3Harris billions in profits. The stoking of conflict in Ukraine will earn them billions more. The European Union has allocated hundreds of millions of euros to purchase weapons from Ukraine. For Ukraine, Germany will almost triple its own defense budget for 2022. The Biden administration has asked Congress to provide $6.4 billion in funding to assist Ukraine and supplementing the $650 million in military aid to Ukraine over the past year. The permanent war economy operates outside the laws of supply and demand. It is the root of the two-decade-long quagmire in the Middle East. It is the root of the conflict with Moscow, the merchants of death are satanic. The more corpses they produce, the more their bank accounts swell. They will cash in on this conflict, one that now flirts with nuclear holocaust that would terminate life on Earth as we know it. And so, you know, earlier callers were questioning my interpretation of the history, but the beginning of the show was really looking at the issue of racism in coverage, of white supremacy in the media news coverage. But, you know, the history is definitely there. And I feel like I really do recommend reading Chris Hedges' essay. I think it's a great overview of that. But also the larger issue, which is the ways in which colonialism and white supremacy and this profit motive, how it drives violence. And mostly it's done in brown countries like Yemen, like Syria. But now it's come to Europe, and suddenly now it's a problem. Jimmy, now it's, you know, and so it's, I think that we really need to, and we are facing World War III, you know, the threat of nuclear war, right? I would like to have a discussion about that, frankly. You know, I mean, what does it mean? And where are we going? And will we, what kind of world will we have? I think, you know, this is a, to me as a native journalist, these are the questions I'm wondering about. You know, the resources that the United States brings to bear are stolen from my own people, right? This is what makes this country so wealthy. And it's being utilized to fund war abroad. And the way in which all of these people who are making these moves, you know, the way in which they draw all of us into conflict in our lives. And of course, the people of Ukraine and the people, you know, and the Russian people, you know, are individually, you know, not actors. They're being acted upon and being forced to turn into something that they would never want. Many of them themselves never want this, right? And I understand that tragedy, but I tying it back to the sort of bellicose nature of white supremacy and colonialism. You know, I think we're at the end of the show, but we will play the clip from what happened at the State of the Union address with Representative Boebert. She is a far right Republican from Colorado. And many of you have seen her in the press doing her outrageous acts, and her and Representative Marjorie Green, you know, they were heckling the president, and I don't think we'll be able to get to the part where I wanted to talk about the Texas primaries and the issue of the big lie they're pushing that actually Biden lost the election and Trump is the actual president of the United States. We'll have to do that on the next episode. We look at the electoral process, what's going on there. So why don't we play that an audio.
Many of the world's fittest and best-trained warriors in the world, never the same. Headaches, numbness, dizziness. A cancer that would put them in a flag-draped coffin. I know. One of those soldiers was my son, Major Beau Biden. I don't know for sure if the burn pit that he lived near.
So that was, I'd hope to have more of a discussion about this, but the civil discourse that we have in America today, we can't discount the roots of it in white supremacy, right? The reason they feel, Boebert and Green feel they can act, Representatives Boebert and Green feel they can act so with so little decorum or respect is largely fueled by the DNA of white supremacy in this country. And of course, a couple of weeks ago when I did the show on Trump's support of Putin and also Tucker Carlson's little ramble about how Putin had never done anything to hurt him, I was really trying to examine the connection between our own far right, and which is really not that far right anymore. I mean, most Republicans who are mostly white, support this kind of rhetoric, right? And what does that mean? And what are the implications of that? I would love to have a conversation about that. We have another caller, Jen.
I totally am so thankful that you have been played this coverage at the beginning of the show. I haven't been listening to mainstream media that much, and I'm not surprised, but it's appalling to me the amount of white supremacy that, you know, went through over and over in the different... it's just appalling. And I'm glad you brought it up, and it's like you pointed out, it's people, they have to divert and talk about something else because they don't want to talk about it. It's sad.
Yeah, I thank you so much. I don't want to, you know, demean or diminish what's going on, you know, the violence happening to people there. I mean, you know, including the Russian soldiers who were sent there, many of them thinking they were just on exercise. They had no idea that they were going to be fighting a war, you know. But the issue is, yeah, I mean, this has an impact, as the Middle East Journalist Association said, has a serious impact, a negative impact on the coverage of wars of people of color, and that it can lead to further tragedy, you know.
Yeah, and I really thank you for playing Chris Hedges. I actually had the opportunity to meet him. He spoke, I was at Rockford College when he spoke at our commencement address when the Iraq war broke out, and it was amazing to me when he started out saying this is about war and empire. People in the crowd started booing, and I'm like, I was just appalled that, you know, at a college campus at our graduation, we couldn't sit and listen to another opinion. It was just like, yeah, this was back in 2003. So May of 2003, right after, you know, we invaded Iraq. And he is just an amazing, yeah. So I really thank you for playing his clip.
Thank you, yeah. Well, thank you all. Thank you for being part of the conversation. I really appreciate it. And that's Mr. Jack Messina for American Standoff, and we'll be back next week.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 10:59 a.m.
It ain't money that makes the world go round. It's only Caleb Wynn, and you are listening to KBOO, the cheerful voice of social conscience. KBOO Portland.
KBOO is looking for a next membership director. KBOO's members are the heart and soul of our community, and we need a dedicated person to honor